Last time, and we're going to move very quickly tonight. We'll probably cover four chapters tonight. Last time, we looked at chapter 13, which was a depressing description of Satan's use of the Roman Empire to afflict the church. And you remember it was the thing about the sea beast and the land beast, and it was conveying Rome's power, its corruptness, its vicious attacks on God and God's people, and promoting emperor worship. That was all chapter 13. Now, the rest of this book is God's response to Roman persecution. And we went through the first 13 verses of chapter 14 last time. You remember chapter 14 started out with the Lamb. We understand that's Christ standing on Mount Zion. And we talked about our song, Marching On to Zion. Zion was a picture of the Jerusalem, the New Jerusalem, as well as the physical Jerusalem, and it gave a good picture of the church and heaven. On the sheet for chapter 14, if you don't have one, there's some up there on the table. We looked at all the other passages where that's used. And then in the remainder of chapter 13, there were four good news messages. The first one, verses 6 and 7, was that good news has come. The second one, verse 8, wicked Babylon has fallen. And Babylon is Rome. And we talked about how we know that, how that symbol is carried through the rest of the book of Revelation. Message number 3, which is verses 9 through 13, was that those who worship the emperor are going to be punished. And message number 4 was that faithful Christians will triumph. So what we pick up, starting with verse 14 tonight, is the actual destruction of Rome. And remember that, that all of this is predicated on the assumption that you've been with us all the way from the beginning. We started out by pointing out that the very first verse of the book of Revelation says, "These things shall shortly come to pass." And we've been periodically looking at the claims of some of our denominational friends that some of this stuff applies, that they would claim some of it applies to Obama or to Boehner or to Mao Zedong or to Stalin or to some modern person. We point out why that couldn't be. In the first verse, it talked about the 144,000. We talked about where that came from. We had talked about it before, back when we were working with chapter 7, and we talked about how that refers to all of God's saved people. And remember that the reason for all this symbolism is that John is not going to be able to say, in ways that the Roman soldiers and leaders could understand, Rome is about to be blasted out of existence. He isn't going to be able to say that, because if he did, it would cause his death as well as the death of everybody this book was sent to. So he has to put it in symbols that the Christians, and especially the Christians that had come out of a Jewish background, that they could understand, but that the Romans couldn't. And this thing starting with verse 14 is kind of gory, and is talking about what happens to Rome. And this is the introduction. It will be carried on in chapters 15 and 16, and that's why we can cover so much ground tonight. I'm reading from the NIV, and I'm starting again with Revelation 14, starting with verse 14. "I looked, and there before me was a white cloud, and seated on the cloud was one like the Son of Man." Remember, that's always referring to Jesus when we have that kind of reference. "With a crown of gold on his head, and a sharp sickle in his hand." Now, I think everybody here probably knows what a sickle is. I find that kids don't. And I had to bring one to class one time for them to see what a sickle was. And the ones, they knew what a weed eater was. And so finally I said, "It's a weed eater with no motor." And they sort of got a hold of that. But you have to understand, this is something you harvest with. This is something you take care of things with. And in the old days, this was a hand thing that they cut the wheat down with. They didn't have any kind of machine at all. So there's a sickle in his hand. And that's the end of verse 14. Verse 15, then another angel came out of the temple and called in a loud voice to him who was sitting on the cloud, take your sickle and reap, for the time has come to reap the harvest, the earth is ripe. So he that was seated on the cloud swung the sickle over the earth, and the earth was harvested. Verse 17, another angel came out of the temple in heaven, and he too had a sharp sickle. So another angel who had charge of the fire came from the altar and called in a loud voice to him who had the sharp sickle, take your sharp sickle and gather the clusters of grapes from the earth's vine, because its grapes are ripe. The angel swung his sickle on the earth and gathered its grapes and threw them into the great winepress of God's wrath. The winepress of God's wrath. If you go back to Isaiah 63, verses 2 through 4, let me read this to you. Isaiah 63, verses 2 through 4, you'll see this reference of the winepress of God's wrath. And this had been read a lot in the synagogues of the Jews at this time as they were being persecuted by the Romans. And here's what it says. Again, this is Isaiah 63, verses 2 through 4. Why are your garments red like those of one treading the winepress? I have trodden the winepress alone. From the nations no one was with me. I trampled them in my anger and trod them down in my wrath. Their blood spattered my garments, and I stained all my clothing. For the day of vengeance was in my heart, and the year of my redemption has come. I looked, and there was no one to help. I was appalled that no one gave support. So my own arm worked salvation for me, and my own wrath sustained me. I trampled the nations in my anger. In my wrath I made them drunk. I poured their blood on the ground. And I guess that's as far as I need to go. Well, verse 4, I guess I missed verse 4, didn't I? Why are your garments red like those of one treading the winepress? I have trodden the winepress alone. From the nations no one was with me. So in Isaiah 63, this picture of the winepress and God trampling the nations was given. And the Christians and the Jews who read this knew about Isaiah 63. And they were fully familiar with what that passage has to say. So they would have understood that. But then there's a really vivid description. Let me go back again to Revelation 14, starting with verse 19. The angel swung his sickle on the earth and gathered its grapes and threw them into the great winepress of God's wrath. They were trampled in the winepress outside the city, and blood flowed from the press, rising as high as the horses' bridles for a distance of 1,600 stadia. That's about 200 miles. Can you imagine a flow of blood, which is 200 miles long and as high as a horse's eye? What's the picture you get? It's a pretty gory picture. What's the picture? Why is it that gory? Well, why would this description be given like this? Remember what has just taken place. We've had the whole 13th chapter talking about the horrible things that Christians were going to have to endure. And then we have God stepping in with these sickles. What's the message being given? What's going to happen to the Romans? They're going to be treated just the way the Christians have been treated. They're going to be trodden down. They're going to be smashed. Rome is going to be completely and totally destroyed by God. And that's a pretty encouraging thing to people that have been going through what they've been going through. You know, you think about how angry you can be when you had your family killed and you've had persecution, you've had your job taken away from you, you've had one measure of persecution after another, and you want to do something but you're powerless to do so, and then your representative comes in and avenges you. And the description given is just, you know, vivid, that they're thrown into the winepress of God's wrath. God is going to straighten this out. Now, in the 15th chapter, this is all continued. The 15th chapter is going to be very, very, very quick because it does not have much in it that is anything other than the Christians praising God for what is going to happen. Because chapter 14 has said there's going to be a great victory. It just hasn't said how. Now we're going to find out how. So let's go ahead and read chapter 15, and we'll go through this chapter very, very rapidly. I saw in heaven another great and marvelous sign. Seven angels with seven last plagues. Last, because with them God's wrath is completed. Okay, so we're going to have the end of this. God is going to finish this up. And again, you notice how long this has been going on in this description. And you have to also realize that what is being given in these verses is going to be similar to Revelation 4:6 in some ways, because the first thing it said is, I saw what looked like a sea of glass mixed with fire, and standing beside the sea, those who had been victorious over the beast and his image, and over the number of his name. What's the number of his name? 666, remember last week. Over the number of his name. They held harps given them by God and sang the song of Moses. Okay, we're going to hear the song in a minute. I'm not going to sing it to you, but we're going to read the lyrics. But what is important here is that there's an enormous amount of symbols involved here. First of all, what's a sea of glass represent? What did it represent in chapter 4, verse 6? What is the sea of glass? When you see a sea of glass. All right, it's a separation. It's the calm before the storm. You know, and when I read that, I thought of when I was a kid in southern Indiana, right before a big thunderstorm came in, what would happen? Be real calm. And then here came the rain, you know, and pretty soon you got a major storm. But there was always that little calm right before the disaster, right before the storm hits. And so we have that here. We have a sea of glass, and yet it's mixed with fire. And standing beside the sea, those who had been victorious over the beast. And remember, the beast is Satan, okay? And his image, and over the number of his name. And there's the 666 again. And there's this song that is sung, the Song of the Lamb. Great and marvelous, I'm starting now with actually verse 3, the middle of verse 3. Great and marvelous are your deeds, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways. Ring of the ages, who will not fear you, O Lord, and bring glory to your name? For you alone are holy. All nations will come and worship before you, for your righteousness, for your righteous acts have been revealed. And after this I looked, and in heaven the temple, that is the tabernacle of testimony, was opened, and out of the temple came seven angels with seven plagues. What's the difference between an image and you notice back over on the other side we had the plagues, and now over on this side we have the plagues, and there's going to be some bowls here. What's the difference between plagues and bowls and all that? What's the difference in these things? You'll notice it sort of answers that question, because let's keep reading here. Again, I'm continuing with verse 6. Out of the temple came the seven angels with the seven plagues. They were dressed in clean, shining linen and wore golden sashes around their chest. Then one of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven golden bowls filled with the wrath of God who lives forever and ever. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power. And no one could enter the temple until the seven plagues of the seven angels were completed. What's a plague? I'm sorry?
A disease.
All right, it can be a disease. What else could a plague be?
Something that either, like, goes over everybody of the intended recipients, that in some way destroys or harms as a punishment.
Okay. One of the things that's said here is that if you look at verse 7, then one of the four living creatures gave to the seven angels seven golden bowls filled with the wrath of God. What's the difference between the wrath of God and a plague.
The wrath of God, I would think, would be stronger and harder.
All right.
All
right. And the wrath of God is His energy, His power, His authority. What are the plagues?
A lot of them are just being nuisance.
That's the use of the power and the energy of God. So what is happening is that God has these things that are an expression of His anger, and it's going to happen by the process of plagues. And what we're going to see in chapter 16 is all of these plagues being played out. But chapter 15, you have the seven angels with the seven plagues. You have the seven bowls. Remember, seven is completeness. So God's wrath is going to be completed. It's going to be completed by seven plagues. God is going to hit Rome from every side. They're going to get it all. They're going to get what's coming to them. And again, remember, the purpose of the book of Revelation is to say to Christians who are being persecuted, God is going to win. You guys are going to be successful. You're ultimately going to see the destruction of Rome. And that's what we're about to see. That's about what is coming up in chapter 16. So chapter 15 is just a prelude to what is taking place. So let's go on to chapter 16. Let's watch this drama play out. Chapter 16. When I heard the loud voice from the temple saying to the seven angels, "Go and pour out the seven bowls of God's wrath on the earth." Okay, so the first angel comes. Verse 2. The first angel went and poured out his bowl on the land. Now, the other ones are going to go on the ocean. They're going to go on the fresh water. There's going to be all kinds of things that are going to happen to Rome. But this first one's on the land. And notice what it tells us happened. And ugly and painful sores broke out on the people who had a mark of the beast and worshipped his image. Little review. The mark of the beast is what? Well, 666 is the number of the beast. What's the mark of the beast? Satan's mark. And what is the image? What is the image of the beast? All right, whatever they did to serve the emperor. So what it's talking about is everyone who was connected with Rome. So that's the first thing that happened. Now, by the way, let me explain something here. I've told you when we started this that unlike the class on Revelation we did 6 or 7 years ago, I wasn't going to take 2 or 3 Wednesday nights to talk about what has happened to justify this, to explain this. But we could do that. And one of the things we know happened about this time was that there were a series of volcanic eruptions. And it seriously crippled Rome. So there were things like this that actually took place. You can actually tie this to historical events. All right, verse 3. The second angel poured out his bowl on the sea, and it turned into blood like that of a dead man. And every living thing in the sea had died. All right, where is this natural disaster happening? What does it say? In the oceans. This is a maritime destruction. And again, there is historical documentation that this happened about that time. And some of it was connected with the volcanic eruption, but some of it was connected with earthquakes. All right, the third angel, verse 4. The third angel poured out his bowl on the rivers and the springs of water, and they became blood. And I heard the angel in charge of the water say, "You are just in these judgments, you who are and who were the Holy One, because you have so judged. For they have shed the blood of your saints and prophets, and you have given them blood to drink as they deserve." And I heard the altar respond, "Yes, Lord God Almighty, true and just are your judgments." That's verse 7. So the next one that happens is the fresh waters are attacked. The fresh waters, the springs, the lakes, the sources of water that they had. So we have the land destroyed. We have maritime destruction. We have water supplies, fresh water things destroyed. That's the third bowl. Now the fourth bowl, and this is verse 6. Or is it 8? It's 8. My Bible has these little tiny numbers, and I can never read this is verse 8. The fourth angel poured out his bowl on the sun, and the sun was given power to scorch the people with fire, and they were seared by intense heat, and they cursed the name of God who had control over these plagues, but they refused to repent and glorify him. So here we have the fourth bowl, and this is fire. Now, there's, again, all kinds of natural disasters that we can document happened during this period of time. And as a matter of fact, massive fires were a major issue in Rome. Some of you know the story of Nero, know something about that. We have one more that we want to look at here. This is beginning with verse 10. The fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and his kingdom was plunged into darkness. Men gnawed their tongues in agony and cursed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, but they refused to repent of what they had done. Now, where is this plague happening? What does it say? Verse 10. The fifth angel poured his bowl on what? The throne of the beast. The throne of the beast. Where's that? It's Rome. It's the emperor. And what happens to the kingdom, according to the rest of the verse? It was plunged into darkness. It was plunged into darkness. And again, it's interesting to look at problems that happened to Rome and to the emperor during the period of time that we're talking about here. What response did the people make to all this?
Wasn't that their praising in verse 7? Well, sort of.
Well, yeah. That's verse 7 is dealing with the angel and the Christians, but we're over here in the plagues themselves.
Oh, wait.
What does it say the people did? They cursed God. Just exactly the opposite. They cursed God. What happens today when there's a natural disaster? They blame God for it. They curse God. Why did God let this happen to me? You know? So we've had God blame for tsunamis. We've had God blame for oil spills, hurricanes, you name it. And so we're not foreign to this. The Romans, when they started having all these natural disasters, they're blaming God for it. And the natural disasters, and there's 5 of them here, are all things that we can relate to. We can identify things that happened that contributed to the fall of Rome. And we're going to see a change starting with verse 12, but through verse 11, we can document the natural disasters that took place. Bill? I think, you know, there's differences of opinion on that, but I want to point something out to you. The verse says, this is verse 10, the angel poured out his bowl on the throne. It doesn't say he poured the wrath out on the city or on the people. He poured it on the throne. What happens when the throne is destroyed?
The people are all confused.
The people are confused. What else happens? Chaos. Keep going. What else happens? No direction. What else happens?
Corruption.
When the hurricane hit New Orleans, there were lots of people that had problems. But what did certain elements in the population do? They started ransacking the place. Because law and order was gone. When the throne was gone, there's no law and order. The Roman soldiers are swimming around in the muck. They're not going to enforce anything. So the throne of the kingdom is in darkness. I think the picture is pretty clear there. If it didn't say what it says, if it didn't say that it was poured on the throne, then you might have some other options. But I think since it's on the throne, you got chaos, anarchy. And one of the tragedies of our culture is every time there's a natural disaster, one of the biggest problems that we have is there are people that come in and rob and steal and, you know, And that's because you don't have any kind of law and order. You go back to 1 Corinthians 13, don't you? Romans 13, where he talks about God's appointed angels of order. And this is somewhat the same sort of situation. Now, what's interesting here is, starting with verse 12, the picture changes. And in the next four verses, see if you can pick up the difference. The sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up to prepare the way for the kings from the east. Now, before we go any further, what's the difference between that and what we've been reading so far?
Very specific,
for one thing. What else? A river's mentioned. Euphrates was a boundary that separated people from Rome. It was a tough river to cross, and we're told the water dried up. But what else happens? What else jumps out at you in verse 12, which is completely different than anything in verses 1 through 11?
It almost sounds like it's preparing the way for the kings and the birth of Jesus.
Well, not the birth of Jesus, but the kings from where?
From the east.
And you remember I mentioned to you the history of Rome shows that what happened was there was a series of natural disasters. And then the Parthians came in and wiped out the Romans. Where are the Parthians? They're from the east. So there's a perfect fit from history. Absolutely perfect fit. And the reason they could get in was because there was a drought and the Euphrates didn't offer any opposition. And you think about in the history of our lifetimes, how many times has crossing a river been an issue? Those of us that remember Korea, was there a river involved in Korea that was a major issue? Well, the main one was the one between Korea and China. And there was this big fight between MacArthur and Truman about whether to cross the river and go into China. MacArthur said yes, and Truman said no. Nobody old enough to remember that, okay. Anyway, the point is, rivers have been an issue, And in this case, what we have now, instead of a natural disaster, is humans invading. A king's invading. And that's not my opinion, that's what it says. Let's read it again. Starting at verse 12. The sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up to prepare the way for the kings from the east. So the kings from the east are coming in. This is the Parthians. Then I saw three evil spirits that looked like frogs. They came out of the mouth of the dragon. Who's the dragon?
Satan.
So Satan's got some other things coming out here. And out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophets, here's what the frogs are. They are the spirits of demons performing miraculous signs. And they go out to the kings of the whole earth to gather them for battle on the great day of God Almighty. Behold, I come like a thief. So what we have here, going through verse 16. Well, let me go on through verse 16. Behold, I come like a thief. Blessed is he who stays awake and keeps his clothes with him, so that he might not go naked and be shamefully exposed. Then they gathered the kings together in the place that in Hebrew is called Armageddon. Have you ever heard Armageddon before? I see heads shaking yes all over the place. Megiddo might be another spelling of that, M-E-G-I-D-D-O. That may be in your Bible instead of Armageddon. Anybody remember what Armageddon was about? All right, it was the major battle between right and wrong, between good and evil. If you want, I have the references there. Judges 5, beginning with verse 19, there's an example. 2 Kings 9, verse 27, and 2 Kings 23, verses 28 and 29. You can read it there. But Armageddon is mentioned as the final battleground between good and evil. In the denominational world, where do we get Armageddon? Anybody heard anything on television from a preacher talking about Armageddon?
Israel and Iran.
The picture that you get by the dispensationalist is that this has happened right now. And that there's a battle taking place between the forces of good, that's Israel, and the forces of evil, that's Iran. Now, if you were dealing with this 25 years ago, who would it have been? Russia and the United States. It's changed over and over and over. Before the Second World War, who was it? Germany and... Well, yeah, I mean, it depends upon which country you were in. It keeps changing. Why? Because their theology is wrong. Okay? Because their theology is wrong. They're trying to take something that was written specifically to encourage the Christians of the first century who were being persecuted by Rome, and what's being said to them is, historically, there have been battles in this place called Armageddon, or Har-Megiddo. And that place is where right and wrong fought. And again, on your sheet I have the references, Judges 5 and 2 Kings 9 and 2 Kings 23 are the specific places that are involved in this. But they would have understood that. They understand. They would have understood that the battle here is moving to an eternal cosmic battle between right and wrong. So we got one more angel in this chapter. The seventh angel poured out, this is verse 17, the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air. And out of the temple came a loud voice from the throne saying, "It is done." Why is it done? Well, we've had all these natural disasters that have set Rome up. And now the Parthians come in and wipe out Rome. What's left? Nothing. The prophecy, the promise of God has been fulfilled. It is done. Okay, next verse. Then there came flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. No earthquake has ever occurred since men have been upon the earth, so tremendous was the quake. The great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. God remembered Babylon the Great and gave her the cup filled with the wine of the fury of his wrath. And remember what we read a few minutes ago in chapter 15, the wine press, the blood flowing, 200 miles long. Okay, God's fury is upon them. And the wine press is the fury of his wrath. Next verse 26, every island fled away, and the mountains could not be found. From the sky, huge hailstones of about 100 pounds each fell upon men, and they cursed God in account on the plague of the hail because the plague was so terrible. There is complete destruction of Rome. Now, there's more to come, but the destruction is chapter 16. And this is what we've been pointing to for the last several chapters. Now, when we get in to chapter 17, we're going to see more descriptions. Most of 17 is, again, praises to God. 18 is most 18 is praises to God. 17 is something else, but 18 is praises to God. And so we're going to see some more about this in chapter 19. We're very near the end of the book. Because what was the purpose of the book? Again, the purpose of the book was to say to the Christians in the first century, yeah, you've been persecuted. Yeah, you're getting some horrible stuff happening to you. But God is going to take care of this. And what we have in chapter 16, God took care of it. And Rome is being splattered. Now, we're going to see some more. I mean, there's a lot of things we could go through here about this description of hailstones and all of that. But the important thing is the destruction. Julie?
I don't know if this is a question that we can ever know the answer to, but okay, when Rome was actually really being destroyed, like this said, wouldn't there have been some Christians that still lived there? Would they have also been destroyed, or would God have somehow miraculously saved them? Or would the fact that they were Christians and were going to be with Christ, even if they were killed physically, it didn't matter because they were Christians?
Well, you've got to remember something here. By the time John gets on Patmos, there were no Christians visible. There were no Christians visible. Rome had killed every Christian they could find. The Christians were in the catacombs. They were hiding. And you've heard those stories. I mean, there was a woman who was brought before the emperor, and he told her she had to renounce Christ, and she said, "I won't do that." And he brought her first son and killed him in front of her and told him, "You're going to have to deny Jesus, or I'm going to kill every one of your sons." And she sat there and watched all eight boys slaughtered rather than renounce Jesus Christ. I mean, stuff like that, I mean, those aren't just legends. Those are historical records of these things that happened. Christians were led into the Colosseum, and the lions were turned loose. You've seen those stories. You know those stories. I mean, there was no Christians around because it was completely decimated by the Roman Empire. And that's who he's writing to. He's writing to these people who are scattered all over everywhere. They've been run out of town. If they're still in town, they're in hiding. And he's saying to them, God knows what you're going through. He understands the persecution you're getting. He knows how much pain you are. And he knows some of you are being killed. Remember, we read the passage back three chapters ago where he said, those of you are going into captivity, you're going to be captive. And those of you that are going to die, yeah, you're going to die. But, and now we have these two chapters that say, here's what ultimately is going to happen. You are going to win. But it still would have been, I mean, I can't imagine what it was like to be a Christian at that time. And we see some pretty rough stuff going on right now in Africa to some of our brothers and sisters, but this was even worse. Cindy?
These physical, natural disasters, are the way they describe them, are they historically accurate?
Oh, yeah.
This tremendous earthquake and the hailstorms?
Well, the earthquake, what is an earthquake a symbol of? This part we're reading right here, the hailstones and the earthquake in this starting, well, let's go back to 17. The seventh angel pours out his bowl into the air, and out of the temple came a loud voice saying, it is done. And then there came. So everything was completed by the time we get to the end of verse 17. And then we have verse 18. Then, okay, so this is the next event. Then there came flashes of lightning, rumbles, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. What do those things indicate? What have they indicated before? We've seen flashes of lightning before. What have they indicated before? God's power. And what is being said here, you know, I think if I was a Christian hiding in a cave, and I'd watched my family be killed one after another just because they were Christians, and I were Roman soldiers running around everywhere, raping and murdering and killing, and you know, I think I'd be saying, how can God do this? How can God allow this? How can God accomplish this? And so what is being given here is a powerful message that says, look, don't underestimate God's power. And so what we're going to have is flashes of lightning, rumblings, peals of thunder, and a severe earthquake. And it goes beyond that. No earthquake like it has ever occurred since man has been upon the earth. So this is one of a kind. No power like this has ever been seen. So tremendous was the quake. The great city split into three parts, and the cities of the nations collapsed. So is it just Rome? What does it say? All of the cities. Notice, this is verse 19. The great city split into three parts. Okay, that takes care of Rome. And the cities of the nations collapsed. So, was the Roman Empire confined to one city? No, it was all over the place. The whole Mediterranean area was dominated by Rome. The Roman Empire completely covered. That's why it would have been hard to believe this could happen. The Romans certainly didn't believe it could happen. They didn't think it was possible that Rome could ever be destroyed. But what happens is that God gets into the picture, and God's power is described here. No earthquake like it has ever occurred before. There's never been anything like this in the history of the earth. And then he goes on and he says, God remembered Babylon the Great and gave her a cup filled with the wine and fury of his wrath. So Rome got an especially bad treatment. Every island fled away, and the mountains could not be found. You know, it was just completely destroyed. What happened to the city of Rome around this time? Remember the story about Nero? What's the story about Nero?
He burned the city.
The city caught on fire. What was he doing? I'm sorry? He was playing his violin, laughing, watching his city be destroyed. The man was crazy. But the point is, during the time that this is happening, notice verse 21, from the sky, huge hailstones of about 100 pounds each. That's English. But huge hailstones fell upon men, and they cursed God because of the plague of the hail. So whatever was going on, you not only had the city burning, but you had all this other stuff taking place on the city. And the suggestion is that this is referring to the Germanic tribes that came in and had these catapults. What do you call that thing that goes around like this, the Trevor?
Well, there's a trebuchet, which is like a catapult.
Yeah, and throws 100-pound rocks, right? And so, and as I said to you, we could spend 3 or 4 weeks talking about the historical evidence of what happened here. But it wasn't just the Parthians. And these, you know what he's talking about, this gadget that wound around like this and flipped rocks, and they were 100-pound rocks. You seen those things? It's been a big deal in the United States. College kids like to build those things now and throw a Volkswagen or something. And, you know, it's a big, big thing. But the fact of the matter is that this is what happened to Rome. Rome had been sieged by the Parthians. But then the Germanic tribes came in, and they had these catapult things that were throwing 100-pound stones. Carl?
I know this is a movie, but in Gladiator, they used stuff like that, that you could see what it was like. They'd have big things that were, you know, soaked in oil, and they'd light them, and the fires would go over.
Yeah. What's the movie? Gladiator? Well, catapults is one, but this other thing is, it's kind of a catapult, except it has a winding thing on it, and it whips it around like this.
Trebuchet, and I think it can fling heavier stuff, and they're not necessarily accurate, you know, but they can fling heavy stuff.
But they're throwing heavy stuff at the city of Rome. You got a big target. And so it doesn't matter. You know, it's like Hitler said with his V2s, we're going to throw them into England, and we're bound to hit something. And that was sort of the way with Rome. You know, they flipped these things. And Carl was describing, they had these big bituminous balls that they would set on fire. And then they would fling them. And they'd go, I don't know, half a mile or more. And when they hit, of course, whatever they hit, they set it on fire. So it was complete destruction. And as I say, the reason we're not taking 6 months or 8 months to study the book of Revelation is we're not going back and going through all those historical references. We're just looking at Scripture. But what I'm trying to say to you is what is described here in this particular section has been documented historically. That when Rome fell, the Parthians came in, then Germanic tribes came in, there were enemies coming from everywhere because once the empire was weakened, they had no defense. And these people had weapons that the Romans had not seen. But what's their response? The last verse of chapter 16, they cursed God because of the plague of hail, because the plague was so terrible. They're blaming God for the invasion of these foreign tribes.
Well, isn't that one time they would have been accurate if it was vengeance for what they'd done to the Christians?
Well, yeah, you can talk about how much God had to do with what the catapults did. The point is the description is perfect. It's absolutely perfect of what was taking place during that time. All right. Well, that got us to the end of chapter 16. We'll start with chapter 17 next time. And we'll be able to do 17 and 18, I think, probably next Wednesday night without much trouble. Carl picked a song for us to sing as in conclusion tonight. And let's turn to number 520, right? And this is a good song, Only a Step. And my point there is we're always only a step from God. Anytime we need God's help, it's a very short step to ask God to help us, to enable us to overcome the obstacles in our life. And if you have something you'd like for us to pray with you about tonight, we encourage you to come up here and express it, and we'll pray with you for it. So Carl will lead us. Let's all stand and sing number 520.